Hello and welcome to another episode of Die Hards and Glory Hunters, and the first one in a while to star the true heroes of this series, and it is, of course, the iconic Smith brothers. So hello to you both. How are we? Pip, how are you, mate?
Good, thanks. How are you doing?
Very well. And Nicholas?
Yeah, I'm good.
Very good. Very, very good. So we had a little chat because I personally very much enjoy talking to these two about anything to do with football. And I hope you as listeners enjoy it too. So we were thinking what we could do for a new themed episode for the three of us. And I've sort of come up with a loose concept, so bear with me, in that we're going to call it Football Hall of Shame. And I say we, I've invented that name, so I'm going to call it Football Hall of Shame. And what I mean by that is that Pip and Nick are going to each come up with three things that they hate about the football world. And it can be anything that they like. I've been particularly helpfully vague. And then we will elect two of them to be officially entered into the Footballing Hall of Shame. Now, that all sounds very official and like this is going to be a continual thing that we then do multiple times. We may never, I don't know, we'll find out. So, but that is how the episode is going to go. So yeah, let's crack straight on with it, and we'll go eldest first. So we'll go to Philip. What is your first entry, and describe as best you can, into the Football Hall of Shame?
Okay, well, when I was thinking about this, I've decided to go really kind of on the football pitch sort of thing. So obviously there's a lot of things in the surrounding world of football that have been discussed a lot recently, Super League, billionaire owners, and so on. But I thought I'd avoid the surrounding nonsense and just focus on the football, what it's truly about. And my first thing is, well, I'll start vague, but then I'll get more focused. My first thing is inappropriate celebrations. And by inappropriate, I don't mean like not PG, like 18 plus, like
not someone getting their knob out.
Yeah, not for me.
I would love to see that, to be fair.
Because I have nothing against that. What I mean is that, yeah, just like celebrations that don't match the occasion. And what led me to this really was that my first idea was really the fact that there's the yellow card for taking off your shirt while celebrating rule, which is kind of a double-edged sword, because like now it's a thing. It's so frustrating when one of your players takes off his shirt, gets a completely needless yellow card, and then like the chance of being sent off, whatever. I guess it doesn't happen that often, but it's just kind of such a pointless thing to get a yellow card for. It's not like a natural thing to take off your shirt. But on the flip side, I also think that they shouldn't be banned from doing it at all. And actually, some of like the greatest ever celebrations and greatest ever moments have been players taking off their shirts, and some like iconic things with the Messi when he like held up his shirt and the El Clasico.
Very cool. Very cool.
Yeah, there's such like
Aguero is the other classic.
Yeah, exactly. Aguero is one. Balotelli, Why Always Me?
The Aguero one, bit of trivia for you here, it did stop someone winning the Fantasy Premier League overall because of the yellow card he got for it. So yeah, for them, he probably hated the rule.
Yeah, that they must be agreeing with my point here.
Must have been brilliant. Mental when he scored. Winning.
Brilliant trivia, that is super.
Don't know how much it is. Yeah. But he then got the yellow card afterwards, so he went back down into second.
Wow.
That's mad. That is, yeah, as I said, very good trivia. Sorry, Pip, carry on.
And so I think that, like, it's actually like there's no problem with taking off the shirt. And I looked it up when preparing to see why it was they did it. And they say it's for like sportsmanship and fair play. But I mean, it's not necessarily like insulting the other team to take your top off. It's just like the whole, like scoring a massive goal, you want to kind of go wild and crazy with the celebrations. And you know, it happens. Sometimes you go wild and crazy and want to take your top off. And
don't we all? Don't we all? On the football pitch and otherwise.
Anywhere. I do a good job at work. I'm sprinting down the corridor topless. Okay, that kind of puts a hole in my argument because you would get punished in other settings. But I think it's a good thing. And like the why always me, Messi. Another one is like when the Leicester owner died in the helicopter crash, and then I think it was Vardy, or I can't remember who scored the goal, but took the top off with the like tribute to him, like the following game, which obviously is like not hurting anyone, not an issue. And the referee had to give him a yellow card because he took his top off. And I don't really see a problem with that. And the sportsmanship, part of it is the sportsmanship according to the website. Part of it's the, they don't want political messages. But then I think they're just gonna be punished on a case by case basis. And then what really stands by, I think, what the true cause is that sponsors, when all the cameras on a player for scoring a goal, sponsors want to be able to see everyone to see the sponsor on the shirt, because that's obviously when it's going to get most viewers. So really, it's another thing that's just dictated by money. And I think in the heat of the moment and the passion of football, one should be allowed to take his top off and run wild. And this extends to other types of celebration, like jumping in with the fans. They say that's a safety thing. How many times has a player ever got injured from celebrating with the fans? Or like, has there been a safety issue? Like losing their minds and being able to like go crazy when you score a really important goal, I think the player should have the right and should not be penalised for jumping in with the fans who should be part of the celebrations as well. I think that's actually quite nice. It like brings the, it's like as much interaction the fans will have with the game during a match.
Sorry to just jump in, but just imagine next season, right, when fans are properly back in the stadium for the first time, player scores for the first time in front of fans in literally over a year, runs over, jumps on them. It's a rare moment of fan everyone player with bonding, everyone with their tops off, pants off, the lot. And then the referee books him for that. Like that's just ridiculous, isn't it?
So I think, but then on the flip side, I mean, I'm going to come across here as quite harsh, because then I was thinking, I don't want it to be like a player just scores a like consolation goal in a 3-1 loss, whip their top off and start running around the pitch.
My point was going to be, do you remember when Spurs played, Mariners?
Exactly. This was my planned segue, but you take it.
Nicholas. No, I'll let you take it. It's your point.
This is exactly my segue, is that then like, yeah, I was thinking you don't want over-the-top celebrations for meaningless goals. And the first example is what I assume Nicholas is referring to here is Vinicius in the FA Cup against a lowly team, already winning by miles, tap in, and just the fucking Mbappe celebration. Like, it's funny. Don't get me wrong. You got to laugh about it. So I can't say, like, I hate it because there's some, but it's like, I feel a bit embarrassed for him because it reminds me
was, like, he wasn't doing it to be funny.
No. When the shit kid scores a goal in PE and everyone like fake over celebrates, it's not a good goal. No one actually thinks, wow, what a great player. It's just like, you're normally shit. Let's like boost his self-esteem a bit. And he's there like lapping it up.
Well, like, I'm against that, Pip, because those were my fondest moments of PE when people told me I'd done well, thank you.
But for a professional player and like to then be doing that in a meaningless match, like, and I don't know if he was doing it, if he was taking it seriously, but like, just like, it's such a small mentality, I think, to be like, this warrants an Mbappe celebration. And even if it is a joke, you also do it in a joke for something that doesn't matter. So it's either small mentality over celebration for scoring a shitty goal, or it's like, just like kind of warped perception of himself and the importance of the occasion. Like, I don't understand, like, I didn't understand that. And so I want players to be able to, and this is where this is what I really mean by the term, what did I say? Suitable?
Inappropriate.
This one, I want the celebration to be appropriate, is that for great goals, great occasions, winning the Premier League with the final kick of the season, dominating El Clasico, then you should be warranted that bit of arrogance, that bit of showmanship, not necessarily like putting down the other team, but a kind of a moment of over the top celebration. On the other side of the scale, I'm not there for players making a fool of themselves, and then it does become unsportsmanlike because it's so clear that Tottenham are better than who was the opposition?
Mariners.
Yeah.
Like, it's so clear that I don't mean like patronize them and like not treat it like a real game, but it's so clear that that's the expected difference. Why are you celebrating for doing something you're expected to do? Like, so mine's a bit of a dual-edged one, and
yeah,
I guess it's hard to please me when it comes to celebration. but just make
unless
it
you're windmilling your cock.
Oh, yeah, windmilling your cock all four
at the right time and place, which yeah, like the Newcastle fan and Alan Saint-Maximin. Do you see that on Twitter when the Newcastle fan was windmilling in the stands and then Saint-Maximin saw it on Twitter and retweeted it? But I mean, that's the kind of thing. There's a certain joy in these over-the-top celebrations.
But at the right time.
At the right time, when it means something.
I'm just going to jump in here. Is that I actually think you? I basically what you're putting in is either over censorship of celebration, but also over celebrating at wrong time. So it's misuse of celebration essentially.
Yeah.
And I agree with you. Celebration abuse, exactly. And I totally agree with you. The one I want to throw out here, and for the listeners, if you look this up, so it was a while ago now, which is why people have forgotten it. Chelsea were beating QPR 6-0 in 2012, and Djibril Cisse was playing for QPR, and he scored one. So it was 6-1. And honestly, he celebrated like it was the winner. It was ridiculous. And bear in mind, he was an experienced player at this point. It wasn't his first Premier League goal or anything. He goes, yes! Come on!
I've just nodded up a picture of him.
Like, it's ridiculous. So that's what I mean. That is an example of what Pip's talking about.
I'm all for like shithouse celebrations, like as Brighton fans, a little mope, like wipe away the tears celebration.
Until we lose the match or whatever, and it doesn't. Until we lose it after full time.
Yeah, and he misses a sitter. Yeah, like, I'm not saying that you can't celebrate in any one particular way. I'm saying choose your moment to celebrate in that way.
Yeah, and sorry, Nick, you go.
I was going to just go on a little diversion. What would your two's go-to celebration be?
Well, this is what I'm talking about. It has to be on the moment. If it was a huge... So you're talking about my ultimate celebration.
Yeah, okay. If you're Aguero against QPR, what are you pulling out? Is it your cock?
No. No, I don't know how we've got onto this track. I opened this in the wrong... I got off on the wrong foot with this. I don't know. I've always been a slight fan of, and where it would come off as way too cocky, is the sort of the showmanship of being like, of not celebrating. And like, you celebrate to such a little extent that it's so clear that you're like worshipping yourself. Yeah, it's too cocky.
My favourite, sorry to bring this up, George, you won't appreciate this, but Hakim Ziyech's free kick against Chelsea in the Champions League a few years ago.
Yeah.
Do you remember it? Where he stood it and just looks at the camera and shrugs.
Yeah.
That's
one of the hardest celebrations.
I think the example you gave of the goal, Nicholas, is the wrong one. Because I think in the Aguero one, no one would have a celebration that they could do because you'd just lose your mind. You'd actually lose your mind run for days. But if I was to score a good goal, I'm with you guys. I think the little bow... Or just the...
Oh, Bao's even taking it a little bit cockier than me.
And then, or just the raise of the arm. Just the or the even, arm. Talking about free kick goals, very similar to the Ziyech one, Henri scored a free kick for Arsenal once, and he just looked at his teammates and went, how about that? And that was pretty cool.
It's kind of like, I do this on the regular, like, I was. Yeah. You all might be going crazy about this, but I was expecting it from the start. Like, that smugness...
You've got to have some balls to do that, though, because I scored in a five-a-side match this week where there wasn't even a ref, and I was absolutely over the moon. I wasn't saying time. I can even shrug then at Gateshead Power League, let alone on the world stage.
Yeah, and this is my problem as well. When you ask me this question, he goes, how would I celebrate? I've never scored enough to get a celebration in my mind. It's been a concern for me.
It's not something the Smith family have lots of experience in.
with the workhorses, I'd say.
And that means that when you score, you just lose your mind because you're so pleased you've scored.
My goals are normally always followed by just sounds of surprise and shock by my teammates. That's normally what follows most of my goals.
I'd probably just go around high-fiving everyone else, because that's what I normally do when they score.
Yeah.
I'd just be congratulating everyone else.
Right, okay, so just to recap, because that was a long tangent about celebration in general, and a good one at that, but Pip's first entry is misuse of celebration, isn't it? That's basically what it is.
Yeah.
So Nicholas, over to you, my friend. What is your first entry?
Okay, I've gone, not deliberately, but all mine, all the kind of three main ones I've got, two of them are off the pitch, so it may work quite well. We might not have the same ones, but my first one's fairly general, but I'll break it down for you. The main title of it is just pundits. I was tempted to just go Martin Keown by himself.
I knew Martin Keown would get a mention.
I was tempted to go Martin Keown by himself, but then I didn't want to leave Robbie Savage out. And then by that point, I just made a whole list of everyone who needed to be included. So yeah. I'm throwing them all in. I remember this was way before podcast times, George, but you said it to me once, or maybe not even to me. You're probably just talking to Pip and I was just listening in. But we talked about how Martin Keown, as a pundit, is telling like some of the best, most technical players in the world what to do when his job was to kick people, was how you phrased it back then. And that has stayed
absolutely
with me.
Oh, Nicholas, you've already won me over with your first entry. You know my feelings towards Martin Keown in particular.
But so then we've got Martin Keown, we've got Robbie Savage, who the whole Derby County, the captain of that team, is just embarrassing. How he has... he still has the balls to rock up on national TV and shit on other people, I'm not sure. But then I've combined pundits with commentators, because they also do my head in. My least favourite commentator, also Martin Keown. Yeah. I'm not sure if you've noticed, my friend pointed it out to me once, and I haven't been able to ever ignore it since. Whenever Martin Keown is commentating, before he says anything, he'll have a little sucking of breath, kiss his teeth, and then start speaking.
Oh, God, no, I'm never going to not notice that.
No, precisely. My friend mentioned it in World Cup or the Euros some time ago. And I was like, I've never noticed that. And if you're chatting shit, but then I listened to it and I've noticed it every time since. Just a little... And then he'll say whatever he needs to.
Now you say it. I hear it. Yeah.
Yeah, precisely. And so then the other, Martin Keown, my least favourite commentator, but none of them are good. As a Brighton fan, I'm fed up of every single game we turn on. We just play bingo now. There is on one of the Brighton pages, there is Brighton commentary bingo, because Dan Byrne being 6'7" and left wing back will be mentioned.
Yeah.
The length of his legs will also be mentioned.
Yeah, stretching to get the block in, 100% guaranteed. Stretching with his long legs to block the cross.
And then we've got Lewis Dunk, it will be mentioned. He's got one England cap, which was against the USA. Ben White might as well still be in Leeds, the amount he talks about. Ben White, formerly of Leeds.
Ben White and Leeds is a whole thing, like the whole Leeds fan base at the time, Ben White.
Yeah.
But yeah.
And then Robert Sanchez. Oh, he was at Rochdale last year on loan. That comes in every time.
Tarek Lamptey, electric pace.
Oh, yep, electric
and
pace.
And the height difference between Dan Byrne and Tarek Lamptey.
Yeah. Oh. and then also, as well as them being so predictable, some of the stuff they say is just so stupid. I noticed this, I was watching the Leicester-Newcastle game recently where Newcastle won, but Albrighton was playing left wing back in the second half. He tried to beat his defender, failed. It's Albrighton, you kind of understand that. The commentator, and I agreed with him at the point, said, oh, he should probably try cut back onto his right and whip some balls in, because that's his strength really, Albrighton. It's not beating men, it's whipping the ball in. So next time Albrighton gets the ball, he does cut back, he whips it in, no Leicester player was there. The commentator now advises Albrighton, oh, he's got to be going to the byline and chipping it in there. So they're just so reactionary. That's what I dislike about them, is how reactionary commentators are. Whatever happened in the last 10 seconds is their new point, no matter what's happened before that. Also, in the big games or any game with a big team, a good player can do an average thing, and it's a lot better. So, like, Bruno Fernandes, good player, don't get me wrong, but if he just opens his body out and plays it to the other side, that is exceptional play from Bruno Fernandes.
Oh, my God. I'm sorry. I've got to jump in here. Yes, absolutely, Nicholas. I feel so... Yes, that was exactly what I was going to bring up, and I want to mention a couple of people in particular who are terrible at this. Go Danny on. Murphy and Jermaine Genus when they're commentating. For example, I think... Because, obviously, they're BBC boys, so it tends to be the World Cup games, for example.
Yeah.
And off the top of my head, I can remember Croatia playing in the World Cup, Danny Murphy's commentating. Literally, Modric would touch the ball and he'd be like, what a player Modric is. He just looks so composed. Like, he's playing 3-yard passes. Modric is a good player, but yeah, it's moments where he's doing nothing, absolutely nothing. And just the repetition of, that's unbelievable, that from Modric, that's unbelievable. And like, any pass he makes, like, he's just controlling the game. Shut up.
On the subject of Danny Murphy, Mike Hunt and Danny Murphy, have you ever heard him commentate or pundit and not reference his time at Liverpool?
Oh, it's like Jermaine Genus at Spurs. Those two
during my time at whatever, like,
yeah.
Yeah, it's every time, like, brings it up, like, and I get that pundits draw on their experience, but, like, Shearer doesn't need to bring up, like, Newcastle and Blackburn every time. Like, you don't need to mention... If you're a big enough player there, everyone knows you played there.
Yeah, exactly. And it's punditry chip on the shoulder, isn't it? It's like, yeah, I played too. I did play.
Surprisingly, we don't hear Robbie Savage pipe up about Derby much. He kind of brushes that one under the carpet, doesn't he?
And my other point on commentators, have you done, Nicholas? Or...
I've got one more point, but go on.
You go.
Oh, my final one is during the whole Super League thing, there was lots of praise for Gary Redknapp and Jamie Carragher for actually kind of speaking out and being the fans' voice. But they came to popularity on Monday Night Football, where games were being moved to a Monday night, which made it a lot harder for fans. While they're going, oh, football is all for the fans, we need the fans for football, while they've lived off moving games to a Monday, so less fans can go, make it so much harder for the fans.
And trying to charge box office tickets for...
Oh, yeah. Well, the Sky and... Working for Sky and how much? £15 a game and all of that. How they have the audacity to shit on other people for not doing things for the fans with some of this... with the company and some of the stuff they're a part of, I don't quite understand.
Yeah, my point on commentators, and this might be a bit of a supporter chip on the shoulder as opposed to pundit chip on the shoulder, is the Big Six bias as well. Like, everything is framed from the perspective of the Big Six, of the big team that you're playing against, and never from the perspective of the smaller team. Like, if the small team is playing well, or... in a way, it's framed as Man United are struggling to break down this team or anything like that. And or even the players, like Yves Bissouma at Brighton, rather than talk about a good player, or like if you mentioned how well he's playing, it's being linked to Liverpool, Man U and Arsenal. Like, and I get that bigger clubs, bigger fan bases, and so that's where the interest for a lot of people lies. But still, like... the framing.
Just let Brighton. Let Brighton fans enjoy him while he's still, while he's still here. I'm just constantly getting reminded. It's like, oh, he's good, but you're not having him for much longer, are you? Like, just let us have some fun for a little while, at least.
So the reframing of all perspectives to a Big Six perspective.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this is a good one. And I'll add one final thing, which is that, again, I mean, Gary Neville and Jamie Carragher do a lot of good things, but I very much agree with Nicholas's last point. And this one is something they're also very guilty of as well. So, and which is that, A, overhyping of big games. So anytime two members of the Rich Six play each other, it's like, right, the world needs to stop, lads, for this game. Oh, look at that, it's 0-0. Funny that, I've wasted an hour and a half of my life. But then also during the incredibly dull 0-0 between two big teams, Gary Neville will have the cheek to be like, they've got to be playing better than that. They've got to show a bit of adventure. Every big club in every big game ever has set up the same way for the last 20 years, which is not to concede the first goal, including Gary Neville at multiple times. He was bombing past his winger when he was playing against Ryan Robert or something like that. Like, it's, I don't understand. It's like, it's commentators forgetting that they were players as well. So yeah. of course the managers and the sides have set up not to lose this game. And there's nothing wrong with that. So I agree with you. I think, I don't know what we'll call this one. We'll just call this crap punditry and commentary, because there is a lot of it. I agree with you. I think that's a very good one to start with. So back over to you. The serve is returned, Philip.
Okay, well, my next one I feel is a bit like generic, cliched. Like, I'm sure this would be on pretty much everyone's list. So I'm not inventing anything new here, but just because it has been mentioned, because it does infuriate every single football fan, is the corners and free kicks not getting past the first man, or massively overcompensated and drifting out of play on the other side. Like, it's almost certain that you're going to get a corner in a game. And the players have the opportunity to practice them so many times and it's not even like they do much more skillful things than shooting. You're aiming from a much smaller area than literally almost anywhere in the 18-yard box. And then the number of times it's cleared by a first man is unbelievable. And I mean, yeah, as I say, it's like the stereotypical, the archetypal pet peeve on a football pitch. But I thought I'd throw it in there anyway because it needs to be there.
Absolutely, well, yeah.
I think it speaks volumes that that is an annoyance in the under-18 youth leagues I used to play in. Reserve leagues and stuff, it is disappointing if you're not beating the first man. That is frustrating people there, let alone in like the best league in the world, supposedly. So
I was just going to say that I think that my frustration with this is this: the reason we all love Premier League football, Champions League football, whatever, is because it's top level sport. And the pleasure for me in watching top level sport is watching people do things you can't do. That's what it, you know, it's absolutely incredible. When someone does a brilliant piece of skill, I'm like, oh my God, I could never even conceive of doing that. That's amazing. It's like any experience where you are a spectator. That is where the joy comes from. But the frustration with what you're talking about and never beating the first man is that, look, I am the world's most average football player. Not that amazing, can kick a football. I would always be able to kick a ball into the middle of the box. I would always be able to do that. I would never fail. It wouldn't be unbelievably accurate, but I would always be able to do it.
That is the argument, I guess, is that like Premier League players would say they're trying to put it in with a lot of pace into like, they're not aiming for the whole 18-yard box.
But don't, because if you do just put it into the 18-yard box, you'll have more chance of scoring than if you hit the first man. So I'm with you, Nicholas. I totally agree with that. But then you just think, but you're not doing that. You're hitting the first man. So just try hitting an area. If you just loft one up there, all right, it may not be as dangerous as if you perfectly curl one onto someone's head, but it's still more dangerous than not getting there in the fucking first place.
And on the theme of not getting there in the fucking first place, this next one is an extension of that, is then the short corner routines that come to nothing. And I know Nicholas is going to pipe up here because he has this stat that they're actually more, have a higher success rate than the balls into the box of short corner. But if you don't look at it statistically and just at a pitch, just watch a game and you see your big, big lads, your Lewis Dunk, big Dan Byrne with his long legs. And Adam Webster coming into the box. And the first time in the game you've had aerial threat up there, it's not a little mope buzzing about.
Trust
me. Then you watch the corner go short, pass back, and then get closed down too quickly and like passing it all the way back to the goalkeeper, and then the whole team having to drop back, and you're in a much worse attacking position than you ever were or had to be. That gripe is frustrating. But then I understand the flip side. And these, several things on my list, it's a delicate balance. Because when they come off, if a short corner or an elaborate free kick routine comes off, it looks smooth and silky as fuck. And that's when you stand and go, that's nice. I really rate that. But how often does that really happen in comparison to the number of failed attempts? Just like disappointing set plays in general.
Go on, Nicholas. What's your stat? I'm interested.
Phil's pretty much covered it. I used to know the exact percentage. I think I could be wrong, but I think it used to be like 0. Oh no, maybe it was like, never wouldn't have been that. I'm getting confused, but maybe like 2% of corners into the box. Anyway, it's a really small percentage of corners directly into the box actually result in a goal. Whereas you're more likely to score from open play, hence the short corner. The short corner isn't necessarily designed to score directly from, but what they're saying is actually rather than taking this corner, we'd rather just maintain possession and try and score that way. Is the thinking.
And that is also another disappointing thing about set plays, is that they seem like such a good opportunity because you can get all the men in the box, you're close to the goal, you have all the time in the world to put it in. And as a fan, so even though you've seen it fail every match in a row for 10 matches, every time you get a free kick in a dangerous position, you're like, heart goes a bit like, oh, we're in with the champs here.
Yeah.
We're in with the champs. Everyone like, cool. I'd be like, if Nicholas went out of the room, I'd be like, Nicholas, free kick. And we come in and watch it. And then 9 times out of 10, unless you've got a Dimitri Payet on your team or something, like 9 times out of 10, it's going to sail over the bar or hit the wall. And like, so much disappointment. And the same kind of for corners. Like, you think, here's the chance. No pressure. Ball in the box. Players in the box. We have a real chance at scoring here. And it's just a letdown every time.
It did come out. I think some manager, maybe Mourinho, maybe Ranieri, I want to say, commented on how strange it is that England fan, how excited English fans get for a corner. And like that doesn't happen in the other countries. So in Italy, if they get a corner, they're not going mental. Whereas in English fans, you always get excited, don't you? All the people start standing up and all of this.
Yeah.
It's just... makes us look a bit silly, really. But it's nice. It's nice to think. It's exciting to think you've got a chance, isn't it? That's what I get about. You'd rather that if you were not necessarily supporting the team, but if you were just making your most exciting football match, you're not taking your corners short, are you? If you had like your dream exciting football match, the corners are going into the box. You're not.
And you're putting your biggest men in there. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's like our equivalent of putting a 20p acca on that you know is never going to come in. Like you get like a 10-fold acca, you stick 20p on it, and you think, like in the build up to the game, you're like, this could happen.
We're winning £500 here. Easy.
£500. And you start spending it in your mind already. Then within like the first get the.
We're lucky
game.
If we've made it past the first two.
Yeah.
Past the first two, we're laughing, really.
Yeah. And they never come in. It's kind of the same with corners. You're just like, there's the glimmer of hope there that something special could happen.
Yeah.
I totally agree with everything you said. I'm going to offer some sort of, I don't know what the word is, conditioning to Pip's theory about short corners, which is that I'm all for them once in a while. And this is the thing that seems to have changed really in the last 2 years in the Premier League in particular, is that teams will take a short corner every single time. And despite there being no success from any of them, they will persist with it every single time. You should take, in my opinion, let's say you get 5 corners in a game, 4 of those should be put into the box. And then to try something different, sure, try a short corner routine. That makes sense. But doing it every single time is lunacy. And I don't know why they do it.
And go on, Nicholas. We are saying this, and we might be slightly biased because George is a Chelsea supporter. Obviously, me and Pip as Brighton supporters. We are blessed to each support a team with one of the highest scoring defenders in the league. So Lewis Dunk and Kurt Zouma, both on 5 goals this season. Whereas imagine how the teams feel who don't have a Lewis Dunk or Zouma in their size, and they must get even more infuriated, or they should even be less excited about corners in the first place. We've got more of a chance than most, and we're still saying, why are we getting so excited?
We had that one season in the Championship where Lewis Dunk was our top scorer with 6 or something in the Sammy Hoopier days.
Not the fondest memories.
Okay, so rubbish set pieces essentially is also a contender for Hall of Shame. Nicholas, I think we're back on you, mate. You go.
My one's a bit more new one, slight, some of Pip's, but my title for this one is just Football Twitter. Because there are some pros. European Super League, when that was coming out, I've never seen... That is the peak of football Twitter, in my opinion. Kind of some of the stuff that was coming out then was actually genuinely funny. But more day-to-day football Twitter, there's just some people who speak so much and their opinions are so poor and so ill-informed. It is infuriating. And my specific example for this one is the people who clearly support Man United because Man United's a big team. And then they just look down on every other club. So there's often debate on Brighton Twitter, which is obviously biased about Lewis Dunk for England. All the responses are no, because he plays for Brighton. If you're saying no, because he's not reliable enough, gets too many red cards, poor discipline, that's in some way a valid argument. But it's just for no, he plays for Brighton. When Yves Bissouma's been linked with Liverpool at points, Man City and Arsenal as well, Liverpool fans saying, oh no, we don't want him because he's at Brighton. That's just, that's what grinds my gears, really. Just people not knowing much about football, acting like they know a lot about football. So I'm not even one. Yeah.
Twitter's a platform, like it's given drunk people in the pub shout at each other an international platform, basically.
And obviously there's the other side to it of all the abuse and stuff, which kind of hopefully gets sorted out as well from people who don't really deserve to have social media. But it's just very poor. I'm saying this and I never even get involved in debates. There's zero point. It's just too infuriating. But
I think you'll find no one that actually knows anything about football ever feels the need to discuss it on Twitter. That is the irony about it. It's people that don't know anything that are like, oh, let's have a debate. And the other thing I would add, which I totally agree with in terms of use of social media to discuss about football, are the really irritatingly like provocative posts that like someone will find a stat that in some way makes some player sound bad and post it on, just waiting for the clickbait, like, oh no, he's brilliant. Just stop. Don't react, people. It's obviously that, like, that's what they're doing. Like the, oh, Bruno Fernandes only scores penalties, and then finding a stat that makes it seem like he scored a lot of penalties. Yeah. Like, he's a good player. Just forget about it. It's not worth the debate.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just a cesspit of humanity, really, Twitter. Best avoided. But, yeah.
Okay, so football Twitter, also a contender for Hall of Shame. Pip, have you still got one more? Was your third one short corners?
No, that was part of the poor set piece.
Cool, though. Cool. So what's your third one?
My third one, this is a difficult one because I had two to contend. So one of them was... conceding unnecessary, these are both ones I thought Nicholas would have said before, so I don't know if this is coming up for him, but one of them is conceding completely unnecessary fouls when you're really high up the opponent's pitch, when a defender is facing their own goal, has nowhere to go, you've got players around you assisting the press, and so either they've got to kick it out of play or attempt a risky pass, and you're just in your excitement to get the ball or naivety, you're just nibbling at the player and just allow him to go down. Because obviously the easy way out for that player is to go down. And you just give him an easy excuse just by kicking him in the back of the leg. Just what, there's literally no need. And it's like the opposite of what you want in that moment. And it just gives them a break and just, it makes no tactical sense. And it's all based on some kind of animalistic, like, some like impatience. It's basically like impatience and lack of clear thinking. And this is where I could maybe link the other one in. And that was another one of Nicholas's that I know is like just defenders who have never scored a goal in their life taking 40-yard pop shots in the last few minutes as if they're going to be the saviour. And I know so many times in a match, Nicholas has lost his cool a bit when someone's done that. But just when like... I don't know if Ben Mee has ever done it, but I'm going to use him as an example of the type of player. I don't want to say that he actually has done this, but if a player like Ben Mee, you need a goal in the last minute, the other team is sitting deep to defend, and it's the same like animalistic impatience, something needs to be done right now and I have to be the person to do it. And then they just decide against all evidence of their entire football career, the data bank of missed opportunities from inside the box, let alone 40 yards, and they think, you know what? Now might be the time, worth a go. And you just, they just twat it with no real technique, and it just sails over the crossbar, and then the other team has exactly what they want, which is possession without pressure.
The only argument against this, or I agree 100%, it does my absolute head in. The only evidence that contradicts this is Vincent Kompany.
Yeah, against Leicester. And this is where, like I was saying earlier, like some of these are a fine balance, because obviously, like if you do a short corner routine and it works perfectly, it's incredible. If a defender then nails one of these shots, you go crazy, because it's one of the most unexpected things and it is mad. And yeah, Kompany versus Leicester is the perfect example.
That's the whole reason why the Kompany against Leicester thing is so iconic, because it's literally a one in a million. Yeah. And I just want to, the best one of what you're talking about. And it's funny to me because I'm not a Liverpool fan, but it's the best one I've ever seen, is that Liverpool were playing Villa it's not even a famous game, but this is how much this is stuck in my mind. Playing Villa in the FA Cup semi-final 5 years ago, I want to say 5 or 6 years ago, Villa actually won the game. So they were 2-1 up at the time. And the ball came out to the edge of the box and Dejan Lovren got the ball. And Steven Gerrard made an iconic Steven Gerrard move of just going slightly right of Lovren to make an angle so that he could wind up for a shot. And you just think, oh, Gerrard moment, given that he is actually possibly the most accurate long distance, or one of the most accurate long distance shooters that have played in the Premier League, certainly, and has done it at Wembley in an FA Cup final, let alone semi-final, as well as multiple times for England and Liverpool. So he makes that iconic little shift so that he gets himself a yard, and you think, oh, Gerrard's free. Just lay it to Gerrard Lovren. Dejan Lovren takes one touch and hits the worst shot I've ever seen in my life. Like a minute to go. It hits row Z plus. It's so bad. And Gerrard just looks at him like, what the fuck have you done?
Yeah.
And
that's exactly the best
example.
It's just both the examples you've given about kind of the fouls and the shoot. It's just so selfish, isn't it? That's what I don't get about the fouls. And it must be, you said like it's animalistic, and I was going to say it must be human nature, because it happens at every part of football. Anyone who's closing down, I'm not sure if it's an ego thing or whatever, but like the striker thinks they've got a chance and kind of would love to just dispossess the striker, whether it's that. But it's just so selfish. And like, if you're thinking about the greater good of the team, you're not doing it, but it might make you look really good if it does come off this 1 in 100 or whatever. And so they decide to do it. It's I'm gonna sound bad here, I promise I'm not one of those terrible like shouty under 12 under 12 coaches, but with my under 13 now team, it used to make me so angry, and that's hopefully I was running the line that half, so I could just like hit my leg with the flag or something to not bollock some poor 12-year-old. But it happens at all points of football, and it is so frustrating, whether you're supporting, whether you're coaching, whether you're on, most infuriating when you're on that team yourself. If you've set up the press, imagine if let's just say Kevin De Bruyne, for City example, has been really smart with his press, shifted out to a right back, Sterling's gone, and Sterling's just gone and fouled him. What? De Bruyne must just be so pissed off after like the effort and intelligence he's put in for Sterling just to try and be some sort of pressing hero. Does my head in.
I think we'll call that like selfish rush of blood play, basically, because I'm with you. The two sort of do link, yeah.
Thoughtless moments of, self-glorification.
Okay, amazing. And so final one then, Nick, what's your final entry?
Right, this is, I have done these in order of how strongly I feel about them. So pundits and football Twitter come before this one, but and this is one I've spoken to some of my friends before coming on here, and they've disagreed with this, but I have said the English-only referee rule as something I don't understand, as I think is poor in football. I don't want to sound like Charlie Austin. Do you remember he had that really famous rant about referees? But some of the points he made are valid. The fact we bring in the best players from abroad, the best managers from abroad, but we insist, oh, no, referees have to be English. And if they were good, that's fine, but they're not really. It's everyone's against having like a certain amount of players from your own nation. So everyone's against, like, in Russia they have it, don't you? You have to have six players on the pitch who are genuinely Russian.
And there's a rule in the German league as well. Yeah, we have the homegrown rule, but that's not necessarily English people. Yeah,
and the argument against that is it just makes them be complacent because they don't have to be that good, but because of their nationality, they know they're in the team. And I think it must be slightly similar with referees because some of the shit they get away with. As a Brighton fan, I'm bringing up Brighton a lot, but it's just where I've got most of my experience from. Lee Mason, when we were playing West Brom, that was a fucking shit show, is what that was.
With the free kick. George?
With the free kick.
Yeah.
So he's blown the whistle. We've scored a free kick. He's blown his whistle before the goal went in the net. And so then he disallows the goal. And then you're thinking, it's shit. I don't understand why he's blown the second time. But at least he's sticking to his guns. But then he doesn't stick to his guns and he decides to give the goal. So then as a Brighton fan, you think, yes!
Get in, donkey.
Yeah, it's another one. He scored one against Liverpool as well, didn't he? But then it was disallowed again and we go back for another free kick after going to VAR. And I'm kind of rolling in how poorly VAR has run into this as well. I was going to do that as a separate one, but that's been discussed so many times before. Yeah. I think we're going slightly more futile ones rather than the big issues now.
Yeah, I mean, there are huge issues like the finance, the racism, homophobia and VAR.
No, short corners.
Racism, Martin Keogh really short out. Corners. And to be fair, Lee Mason, I looked this up as my research, he hasn't refereed a Premier League game since.
Oh, really?
Yeah. He's done some, he did us in the FA Cup still. We got him again. But there are other referees. So Mike Dean and all the abuse he got after it was bad. But it was a horrific decision for Thomas Souček, someone to say red card. And how you can be so bad, I don't understand. I don't understand how we can just put up with it because they're English. The best referees clearly aren't English because they're not the ones doing the big games in the World Cup. We had Martin Oliver, who was popular at a point, didn't we? Is that his name? Yeah.
Oliver.
Michael Oliver, that's one. But clearly we don't have any of the good ones. They won't play a big part in the Euros. We don't play a big part in the Champions League or the World Cup. And so if we're advertising the Premier League as the best league in the world, way more money than any other league. So it's not like we can't afford to get these referees in. It's not like we don't have the pull to get the good ones, but we just stick with the shit ones because they're English when that isn't consistent in anything else the Premier League's done. That's why I get rid of it.
Oh, we have got a late runner. That I so agree with that. I just don't understand it. Because I think it becomes most obvious when you watch a Champions League game and a ref from Italy or Turkey, the two, and I think there's a Dutch one who's particularly good as well. Kuipers. When the standard of refereeing is so noticeably better, and I'd go as far as to say the game gets better because of it. Like they manage it better, the game flows better. It's so weird, like it's so noticeable how much, you know, that whole standard is just elevated because of the referee being better at his job. And you just think as Nicholas said, the Premier League is the best league in the world. We dominate everything pretty much in terms of having monopoly over money and rights and all of that sort of stuff. Why don't they import in the best referees to make a better product? I couldn't agree more.
No, I was going to say something, but I've forgotten. Carry on.
I think referees, I always find it like feel a bit bad for the referees, but it's not a question of like even criticizing the individual performance of the referees. It's just why not have the best of the best if you want to be the best.
I've remembered now. It took me a little while, but after the recent round of Champions League things, there's a few YouTube videos where you can hear and what the referees are saying to the players, and so interesting. And it was Kuipers who was so no nonsense, clearly respected by the players. And we don't get it's a different point, but we don't get that with the English referees. But seeing kind of how professional, how controlled, how respected the Champions League foreign referees were, it just kind of backs up the point of how much better the Premier League would be if we did have them.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I totally agree with that. So before I have got the two in mind that I'm going to put in as the first entries and possibly only entries into the Football Diehards and Glory Hunters Hall of Shame. But is there any other honourable mentions you want to have a last minute rant about?
I got a list of other ones I thought about when considering, but didn't make the list.
Reel them off.
I'll just reel them off and then we can have any thoughts at the end. Lack of consistency with punishing diving. Mino Raiola, VAR, but we've kind of covered that. The Messi versus Ronaldo debate. The Premier League has come up with their own Hall of Fame. Not quite sure how Grant Holt has been missed out. That was another serious concern of mine. And then the striker prejudice related to that. That's where I got my whole of my Grant Holt comment from, because the kind of nominees for the next Hall of Fame member, so attacking centric. They've missed out players like Ashley Cole, who you'd think would be a shoo-in, just not mentioned, whereas you've got so many strikers, all of that. So a lack of appreciation for defenders. And finally, the other one I considered was international friendlies.
Oh, God, yeah. Pip, have you got any?
Mine was Bielsa getting third place in Men's Coach of the Year.
Last year.
For winning the championship and not even in a particularly better way than it has been won before. To get the Coach of the Year internationally was crazy. And my stance has softened because they have had a good season in the Premier League, and you can't argue that they've been a very entertaining team to watch and admire the way of playing. It's hard to make the transition with the same playing style and so on and so on. But at the time, Bielsa being third best coach in the year for winning the championship, just because of he's got this kind of cult and he sits on a bucket, I don't think that qualifies him really.
That's fair as well. I'm trying to think, was there any that I particularly want to comment on there? I mean, international friendlies goes without saying. Grant Holt not being in the Hall of Fame is nothing short of a disgrace. But I think the best thing you did is that those ones that you sort of mentioned, with the exception maybe of Bielsa, is they sort of are into the ones that you've already said before. You know what I mean? They fit quite nicely. The Messi and Ronaldo debate is football Twitter gone bad. Kind of thing. So
Just before, I feel, me and my brother said we wanted to be negative. But I do want to put, I was thinking, I can't just moan for a whole hour. Well, I do it a lot, but maybe not when people I don't know are listening. I need to show another side to me. So for my pundit one, I thought of two things I would do to improve, okay? Not only change everyone, but...
Sounds like a moan to me, but carry on.
No, I'm getting to it. The two things I'd improve, first of all, me and my friends often comment, like, my friend will be cooking or whatever, just got his back to the TV. I'll be saying, oh, did you see how shit... Like, did you see that when it's just some player who's done something shit? Doesn't get highlighted as much as when something's good. I would like to see more highlights of players really fucking up, is my first one. Like, 5-yard passes which go out for a throw-in, reel it up. And then my second one, I talked about Brighton fans, or Brighton games, you get the same stats about every player. And this stat was given to me by Pip in the pub, as much as we've shitted on the whole pub debate. But we need more stats like... Do you know which one I'm going to go for, Pip?
No.
Dale Stevens is the only Premier League player whose parent, or is it father, has appeared on Holmes Under the Hammer. That is the trivia I want to know.
Like, yeah.
If you're getting paid
money...
You
know that. You weirdo.
A friend told me. It gets passed on by word of mouth, doesn't it?
Yeah. So if you want to be playing the commentators the big money, which I'm sure for an absolute racks, they should be paid to come up with interesting facts like that and not Dan Burn has long legs.
Yeah, true. Yeah.
But that is a positive spin.
Yeah. Yeah. What's someone got like in his like science GCSEs or something? Might just something a bit different.
Yeah. Really excelled with his creative writing, but God, was he shit at chemistry.
Yeah, that's the thing. You could combine the two, Nick. You can combine your two suggestions. So let's pick a random player. We'll use Mason Mount because he's my hero. Mason Mount just chips one over the bar from a yard out, and they say, yeah, but he got an A in physics.
Yeah, that's what they say. Don't be judging him with your C, viewers.
Or just opinions from people who know nothing about football. Just maybe just like, my nan thinks he's got a nice smile.
Yes. You see, my friends, if I ever make it, if this podcast makes it, or if one of us comes rich, I will buy the rights to the Premier League. I know you're thinking big money. Gift of the gab. I'll haggle a bit. I'll haggle like a club. You know, 12 Jaegers for £10. I've only got £8 with me. What are you going to do? That's how I kind of play it with Sky. But
my point in that example is you could just buy the 12 Jaegers for £8, but carry on.
Yes. That is the point, but you're haggling. You see, I've won. Bang. See, there we go. You've just backed up my point. Just that's what she says.
Okay.
She being the Jägermeister little waitress. You know the sort.
Is she little?
I think we
yeah, but normally tiny.
Where are we?
George has been ready to wrap up for about 15 minutes, Nicholas. You said, sorry, did I suggest two ways to improve?
I'm glad we made extra time for the little Jägermeister waitress. Who the hell is that? She was a special job? What does that mean?
That was a path off of a path, okay? But my main point was, football broadcasting, we could make it so much more exciting. More interesting facts through more interesting people with more shit shown on the highlights. Really expose the players.
Very good.
George, the floor is all yours.
Thank you. Now, I'm glad that we made extra time for that. So, yes. To wrap up, I've lost myself. To wrap up, we said that I would be picking two to be selected into the official Hall of Shame, whatever that really means, because ultimately it's totally irrelevant, a waste of everyone's time, but thank you for listening. So
our review of life gone.
What a waste, but come back next week.
But to give it some sort of finality, I'm going to pick one of each of yours. And so things like, I'm not going to put in celebrations, I'm not going to put in set piece routines, I'm not going to put in commentators and pundits, and I'm not going to put in football Twitter, even though I agree with all of the points that you've said on all of those things, for the pure reason of it sort of gives you something to talk about and abuse, and it's nice to have things to moan about. And in some of those, like, for example, celebrations and free kicks, there is a positive side, even if the negative side outweighs that. That means I'm going to be putting in your last entries from each of you is English, the English only referee rule, which I didn't know agitated me so much until Nicholas said it. Now it just seems to me ridiculous that it's not, that it is a thing. Get the best refs in, the product of the Premier League would improve immeasurably. And I'm also going to put in selfish or thoughtless play, because you're right, it is, of all of the things we've talked about, the most infuriating thing. When someone makes a foul when they don't need to, when a defender, Dejan Lovren, takes it off of Gerrard and smashes it into Rose with a minute to go. They are the most things that have infuriated me the most when you've been speaking about them. So they are officially the first two entries, or maybe only two entries, into the Diehards and Glory Hunters Footballing Hall of Shame. Thanks for listening.
A hall of shame so small. It's more like a closet of shame.
It is. It's a drawer. It's a drawer of shame.
A drawer of shame.
Yeah, absolutely. But yeah, as ever, a huge thank you to, I mean, really, you two should be bloody pundits. That's the thing. That's what they're missing out on. That's the content that people actually want. Get the Smith brothers on.
Well, I'm not sure. I haven't even had a record worst season at Derby, to be fair. Savage still just about tips the experience scale.
I'd back myself to be a pundit.
Yeah, I thought
I thought you'd say that. You were backing yourself to buy the Premier League a minute ago. but yes, thank you as ever to you two and to everybody listening. I hope you've enjoyed the absolute nonsensical shambles that was this episode of Die Hards and Glory Hunters. Follow the podcast on Twitter. That's why I stopped myself there. I was like, it's a bit ironic, isn't it really? But share this and get your friends triggered or whatever. I don't know. Do what you like. but yes, thank you as ever. And I'll be speaking to you guys soon. Thank you very much.
Thank you, George. Always a pleasure.